All right, and welcome to the Off-Track Racing Show, presented by BikeMag.com. It's been a bit of a delay here, better late than never, as we say in the office. We're coming at you guys from Whistler, BC, in our studio. And when I say studio, we're in our remote location today. We're in my work office because, well, I have to put in a 9-to-5 shift and I'm on lunch break so I can pay the bills. So, again, I'm your host, Tristan Merrick, and we're coming at you guys for another amazing show in the books here. Of course, we had Worlds last weekend coming from Pietermaritzburg, South Africa, and what an amazing race. We had the hometown kid made the magic happen and became one of the first back-to-back world champions we've seen in a while, and doing it on home turf even makes it even all that harder. It's just myself in the studio today. We're already at show number 10. Yes, 10 shows deep this year. If you're listening for the first time, check us out on iTunes. They're all out there for free. And you can download them. Hopefully they're not a waste of time. Just search out Off-Track Pre-Race Show and all the action's there. Of course, BikeMag.com, they put it up. And of course, they link it up with the Off-Track Gallery that Sven Martin shoots for BikeMag. And all the behind-the-scenes action going there. So if you want to follow that on Instagram, hit it up at off_track. And you guys can stay up to date there, of course, on Twitter as well, off_MTB, and that's where we let you guys know what guests are up and who's on the show. And joining us this week, it's been a bit of a battle on my behalf because of my work schedule, and of course, this guy at the same time, all around nice guy. He had kind of a breakthrough ride at the Winter Park Enduro World Series. I don't even really know how I should introduce him because he's a rider, he's an employee, all around badass adventuring dude. We got Joey Schuessler coming all the way from Boulder, Colorado. Joey, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Tristan, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Well, thanks. Thanks for taking the time. We know both of us. I'm a pencil pusher, a paper pusher, 9-to-5. I know you're kind of from the outside. Maybe that's what it is. But you work for one of the kind of raddest companies out there. And I would assume your 9-to-5 is probably a little different than my 9-to-5.
Oh yeah, for sure. Especially in the summer, it's. It's hard to call it a real job, but man, it's good. Yeah, working at Yeti's great.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's just dive straight into the race action here. We'll go into so we got tons of questions for you later on. There, lots of fans wanting to know exactly who you are. I mean, I think you work for one of the kind of like I said, one of the coolest companies out there, and you guys do so many things with your fans, like the tribe gathering and everything else. So, lots of Yeti enthusiasts have many questions for you, but. We just had Worlds. I mean, I don't even know where to really start there in terms of results. Juniors, the man-child, one of your teammates actually came through, and he got second last year, probably wasn't too happy with that, and walked away with gold this year, and that's Richie Rude.
Yeah, that was amazing. It was great to see Richie pull that off. Our downhill team been struggling a little bit with our momentum this season, not the greatest results, and then, you know, Cam obviously getting hurt at Endora kind of put a damper on things, but yeah, to see Richie just bounce back and stick to, you know, his main goal for the season was to win Worlds, and to see him pull it off and, you know, deal with all the pressure that Worlds brings and just make it happen was awesome, and, you know, everyone here at Yeti was so stoked to see that, so.
Well, yeah, you guys have such a rich racing history. I mean, that's kind of almost you guys as a company and a race team, kind of almost in a transition, I guess, in the last couple of years. And maybe you can speak more to. I think maybe not a lot of people out there realize. I mean, Richie, yes, he is a junior, but he chose to race seniors all year. So this is his first time racing against the young kids again. What made his choice to only race with the elite guys this year rather than battle it out in the junior ranks?
I think for Richie, he's always kind of done that. Like in the States, he never really raced junior. He always raced pro. And I think he just, I don't know, goes faster when he's racing against the pros. So definitely to race with the juniors is a different realm for him. And no, it was cool to see him pull it off and you know, adapt and make it happen. So it's good.
Exactly. It's a kid. He has very promising future ahead of him. That's for sure. I've seeing him race the last few years and just watching him grow and develop. And he seems to have a very level head on his shoulders there. Very cool. Very cool. It's cool to see him walk away with that that gold medal, and it's just kind of a tick in the box of tick off the box of one of the probably many things he's got outlined and wants to accomplish in his racing career, and it's just the start of it for him.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's awesome to see him kind of come up through the ranks with Yeti, because you know, obviously Yeti, like, we can't hold the biggest race team out there, but you know, a big goal of the program is to bring kids up and you know, get them up to speed in the elite ranks. So Richie's just another example of that. And I mean, over the years we've seen tons of people come up through the program and, you know, maybe eventually get bigger budgets on bigger teams, but no, it's just what we do at Yeti, and it's cool to see it happen with Richie too.
Yeah, so very cool. I mean, I want to definitely touch on that with you later on. I mean, because you are one of those examples. You were, you know, brought up through the ranks and have gotten you kind of where you are today. So such a cool program. And then of course with the Worlds, we had Little Miss Seagrave there. She won the junior female. Not many competitors in that category. I'm not too sure what happened to defending champion Holly Feniak there. I saw her on the start list, but never saw her, never saw the time. So not too sure what's going on there. But then of course the elite race, I don't even know where to touch. I mean, I think the biggest thing, there was lots of people talking about, the race course and just the quality of it. It's not a true downhill track, but you know, for me as a spectator, I mean, the last time we had such tight racing was Australia and Canberra, and the same things were said. Yet, you know, I don't think, as much as I love to see Danny Hart win by 10 plus seconds, it's more exciting to almost see these riders come down and they're just a fraction apart. And you know, the top guys, there was no time between them. I mean, what's your take on the course, Joey? Was that something, you look forward to as a spectator, seeing that tight racing, or would you rather see somebody just blow the doors off everybody else?
No, I thought the course was actually, you know, pretty cool from a spectator standpoint. You know, I mean, it looked, you know, very challenging, and with the times coming down tight, it was definitely a true test of the riders. And you know, whenever you have a race of that caliber on any course, it's going to be fun to watch. You know, like, that's one of the things that was always cool about dual slalom. You could put up cones on a, you know, boring grassy hill, and it would be the most exciting racing to watch. So I mean, I thought it was a cool course. It looked cool on the TV, and seeing all the riders come down was awesome.
And were you ever fortunate enough to race there? Because I know you haven't raced the World Cups for kind of a couple of years now. Was that something you were able to ride there back in the day, or?
No, I actually never made it to that race, but I did race Canberra in Australia, the Worlds there in, what was it, 2009? And, you know, a lot of people are saying similar things about that course, but, you know, that was one of my favorite events I've ever competed in. And, you know, it just came down to the wire on race day, and, you know, it built for a great, great race.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and I guess I think we just tried to go on it right away. I mean, Greg Minnaar won Leo Gang Worlds last year, knowing last year at this point that Worlds was going to be in his hometown. I mean, pretty much the track ends right in his backyard. To try and go back-to-back wins for Worlds is a huge, huge undertaking and a huge accomplishment that he did, let alone it's his home court. Like, I couldn't even comprehend the nerves and the media attention and everything this guy had to do just to, before even getting to the start gate. I mean, it's, what he's done for cycling as an individual, and just, he's such an all around amazing, amazing guy.
Yeah, it's incredible what he's done for sure. And this is, like, you know, Greg Minnaar has always kind of, I think, blown all of us away as a rider and what he's accomplished, but this was, like, definitely the one ride that everyone wanted to see happen, and he made it happen. And yeah, it was incredible. It was incredible. And by winning by such a small margin, it's just like, wow, how did he do that, man?
Well, to crawl it back too, right? This is a guy who was down to Mick Hanna. Mick Hanna almost kind of looked like he had it in the bag to crawl it back. I think he's down, what, by point eight going in after the first split, and then crawling it back to win by 0.39. It's,
yeah, the dude just has pure determination to win, and I guess I guess that home crowd cheered him on to the finish, but I can't even imagine doing what he did there, and it's incredible.
No, it's hometown pride and all that stuff just shines through. And I mean, we've kind of seen him this year. He's been a tick off the mark that we've normally seen him in the regular World Cups. You know, he was normally he's that guy. He's always top five, you know, always going for that top three kind of spot and can always win. But you know, the kids have kind of risen up like a bit this year. So interesting to see. I've heard a few rumors floating around. Nothing's been confirmed or whatever. This is just pure off track speculation. I mean, does he retire now? You know, does he go out at a you know, he's not old, but he's 31. Does he go out on top of the game and to go enjoy the rest of his life? This is a guy that's been born and raised in racing, and I think he's been racing overseas since the age of like 16. So he hasn't really known much else.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, that's something that'll be up to him. I could see him racing for many, many years to come like Petey's done, but I guess if you're going to go out with a bang, that would be the one to do it with, because it's pretty much going to be impossible to top winning worlds at your home track again. So
yeah,
unless they hold worlds again in South Africa next year and he does it back to back, I don't see him doing anything much gnarlier than that. So
no,
it will be interesting to see, and you know, it's totally up to him. I could see it going either way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just to see it in the current racing caliber right now, to get back-to-back wins, just amazing there. But such sheer heartbreak for Mick Hanna. I know when they went to the screen when Greg went across the finish line, I think you could have read his lips pretty clear. It was happy for Greg, I'm sure, later on. But you know, the one kind of course that suited him, and he was a guy kind of that was in contention the entire time. I mean, he was death grip, speed tucking everything that entire week. Like, you know, most of the time the top of his helmet was lower than his handlebar height. He was cruising down everything. So such shame for him. But as they say, there's always the next year, always the next race. That's the bittersweet thing with worlds, I guess. So
yep, for sure.
And then of course your teammate all around good guy Jared Graves in third on his enduro bike. I mean, I know there was lots of talk of like, oh, what do you ride? Do people ride these specialized, you know, special built bikes like Stevie Smith and Nick Beer did, or do you ride a 27.5, or do you ride a 29er like Mitch Ruopolato? And then Graves just takes what he's been winning on quite handily all year, puts a bigger fork and a couple different you know, Shimano parts on it, and comes down in third. Like, I was blown away as somebody that got to race against him at the Whistler Enduro World Series. I couldn't be more happy for the guy.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was amazing. And you know, that was his one focus for downhill for the whole year. And you know, he's always been a great downhill rider, but it's crazy to see that this year was, you know, probably one of his best downhill results ever. And it was just one race and he made it happen. So yeah, I mean, I think we all knew Jared had the potential to do really good at this race. And I mean, I wasn't really sure what that was going to mean, like maybe top 10, top five, he could win. Like, for Jared Graves, any of those things is a possibility, but it was just hard to really say what he was going to be able to do on that bike.
Yeah.
But you know, I think usually for those races, like the downhill bike's usually the best call, but that's usually because, you know, that's what you've been riding all season. That's what you're used to. And that was kind of Jared's philosophy behind riding the enduro bike. You know, he's been racing on it all season. He's hardly touched his downhill bike. So, you know, he's comfortable on the SV66, and just, you know, some of the Enduro World Series rounds we've raced are gnarlier than that track, apparently. So,
yeah.
I mean, it all made sense, and in the end, it paid off. So, it's awesome.
Yeah, so cool. And I think just looking down, I mean, just seeing guys like Blenkinsop in fourth and Simmons in fifth and Nick Beer in sixth, like guys that normally, I guess I personally wouldn't associate with this type of track and getting those results coming through in the clinch. So cool to see that still, you know, a 26-inch wheel bike. There's so much talk within the industry of, you know, what's the Kool-Aid that everybody should be drinking and riding. And at the end of the day, I mean, 26-inch wheel bike prevailed, and yeah, and Jared in third place on a little bike, which is such a, it's got to be cool working for a company like Yeti, and it's, hey, this is our trail bike, but you can also go out and get a podium at Worlds on the right course, you know. It's such a cool story.
Yeah, no, it's really great, and it's awesome. It all came together.
Yeah, exactly, and I guess, you know, sad news, you know, G. Atherton coming in seventh. The guy seemed kind of unstoppable all year, and battling some stomach issues all week, and just didn't have any gas in the tank there. And then of course, Stevie Smith, I gotta put my piece in because I'm a Canadian. I grew up with him on the island. Pure heartbreak in the first. I wouldn't even say he really even made it into the first corner, first 20 feet of the course, going down over the bars. You know, that caught out Mitch Ropilato as well. And, you know, sad times. It seems like I personally thought Stevie could have been Greg's kryptonite there in the race. Just confidence is such a deadly thing. And Stevie's got, I think he had a whole truckload of it on the way down there to South Africa.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know. That's just one of those things that happens with racing. And, you know, for every time that you don't get away with it and you have a crash, I'm sure you get away with it a few times and take the win. So that's just how it all came together for this one. But you know, just how racing goes.
How she goes, yeah. And then, of course, with the women's race, Rachel Atherton just kind of doing what I think everybody expects her to do. And I'm intrigued to see if, you know, there's the girls, you know, obviously Emmeline's been stepping up and Manon's been stepping up to try and battle it out. But that girl just seems to have, again, confidence. And for somebody that's never actually even raced South Africa to show up and get a hang of the track and get that win and get it by a convincing margin. And it shows just she is on another level, and the bar's been raised this year. And I can't wait. Almost can't wait till opening round next year to see what these ladies do in the off season to try and battle it out and try and take her off that top step.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and it's always cool to see, you know, the level of the women, you know, building right alongside the level of the men always. And it seems like the last couple of years it's been getting, you know, a lot more competition and the field's going deeper. And so that's great to see.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess one question I had for you, because you deal with the marketing at Yeti and stuff. I've talked about it lots on this show because I love personally reading them. The race journal entries that Jared's been doing, and then Richie did at Worlds. I mean, is that was that your brain kind of brainstorm idea, or who came up with that? Because I feel it's such a cool format for our listeners here to mountain bike enthusiasts to kind of really see what goes on in the day to day stuff in a different format.
Yeah, no, for sure. I guess it kind of came about, we'd always done the Yeti team videos like forever, and we'd have, you know, out every Wednesday, the race recap. And I guess just kind of over the years, it got a little bit more stale, and, you know, every team was coming out with them. And so, you know, eventually it's kind of time to take a step back and look what else we can do and just to keep things interesting. And with our video guy, John Reynolds, moving on from Yeti to Metis Creative with Clay last year, we came into this season not knowing exactly what we were going to do, just kind of with, you know, launching all the team media and stuff. And, you know, we didn't have the budget to hire a videographer for everything. So we went with, you know, just getting high-end photos from, you know, either Sven or Sebastian Sheik, and coupling those with Rider Diary with, you know, Cam, Richie, Jared. And, you know, Jared's been really great about keeping up with that. And I think it's been catching on a bit. And, you know, he's done a great job writing those. And it's a really cool insight, I think, to see what's going through his head throughout the whole week and what it actually takes to do these UWS races and, you know, be a top level racer. There's a lot of stuff that goes on throughout the week to make that good result happen at the end of the weekend. So to have Jared sharing, that's awesome. He's been really great about that. So it's good.
Yeah, no, I look forward to them after every round. You know, I guess it's a different sort of medium. It's not just some little voice clip or I guess when I read them, I feel passion from him and just how much of a professional he is when it comes to his racing and what he needs to do and especially with the Enduro World Series being so new and you know, him kind of rolling solo to a certain degree at these races, just like what goes into it. And obviously the last one is bike not showing up in time, so trying to borrow a bike and especially with the European format being blind racing, picking and choosing your battles as far as what courses do you go try and ride or do you try and go walk them, that kind of thing. So I hope that's something you guys can keep going in the future there, because I personally love it and I keep talking about it on the show, and hopefully the listeners of the Off Track Show are catching on to it, because it's a good way to just see exactly what's happening there. So
it's for sure. Yeah, there's really no way to actually experience what one of these events is like, and you know, there's drama every time, it sounds like. So to get that from Jared, we're definitely lucky that he's keen to do those.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's just dive straight into you now. I mean, as our guest on the show, obviously you talked about with Richie, somebody that was kind of brought up and developed within the race program there at Yeti. That's you know, that's when I first knew, like, who is Joey. It was through the videos that the recap videos that you guys used to do, the Yeti team. You started off with, you know, their grassroots young program, and eventually went full factory, and now you're work full factory downhill. Now you're working for them. I mean, tell us a little bit about how you were brought into the kind of Yeti family and how it's gotten to you where you're at today.
Yeah, no, it's crazy to look back and think about everything that Yeti's done for me over the years. And it actually all started with back in, what was it, 2007. I was riding, you know, just for a bunch of companies, kind of sponsors I had picked up on my own, just grassroots kind of stuff. You know, just basic sponsorship, and I had a deal with Fox Racing Shocks, and Mark Fitzsimmons, who runs that program, is closely tied with the Yeti program as well, them being one of the title sponsors of the team. He said he informed me there's an opening on the Yeti grassroots team, and it was pretty much a no-brainer being a Colorado kid and, you know, wanting to ride for the company just down the street and such a rich race history and top program. So that's kind of how I got started on the program. And then, you know, 08, 09, worked my way up from the grassroots program to the national team, upgraded to pro from juniors, started racing all the national rounds here in the U.S. and was doing pretty good on those. And, ended up going to Worlds with Yeti twice, once as a junior, once in elite. And, kept moving on from there. Did the full World Cup season in 2010 with Yeti, which was totally an amazing experience. And that was the year Aaron Gwynn was doing the World Cup program with Yeti and Jared. So, you know, just being around those guys kind of allowed me to just get that inside perspective of what it means to be a top racer. And, that was a great experience. And then, I guess all through this time, I was going to college at University of Colorado in Boulder. And, you know, after racing and, you know, kind of changing my goals from wanting to be like the best next Steve Peed downhill World Cup racer, whatever, you know, every kid's dreamed, to more wanting to do, you know, photo video stuff as well as race. I guess once I was close to graduating from college, you know, Chris Conroy from Yeti approached me and, you know, said, what do you think about not being just a racer and being an employee here at Yeti too? So I guess after college, it just made sense to make the move.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, it's so cool. Like, I used to watch those, you know, as a younger Grom, when I was first moved to Whistler, I'd watch those Yeti videos and, you know, they'd come out and I'd get, you know, super pumped, because it was like, you guys had this amazing team feel, and as far as, you know, Yeti taking care of you guys and your support, and from the basic grassroots riders all the way up until, you know, like when the top World Cup guys were in town and everything, doing those Mountain State Cup rounds and everything. It was so cool to see that, and so cool to see you. Like, it's an amazing story that you got brought in at a young age, and like you said, you're riding for the company that's just down the street, and they just happen to have one of the most amazing race history out there in terms of developing riders and having their top level athletes. And maybe in terms of when you were racing the factory world, you know, when you're on the factory level, what was that like that year? Was it a bit more of a bigger jump than you would have thought to go from racing to be on their pro team to going full factory racing every World Cup?
Yeah, no, that was definitely a big jump, and I was only like 19 at the time, so it was definitely big, and you know, that was the dream, was always make it onto a factory team, and you know, my results in the U.S. were good, like top three at most of the nationals, and you know, top five at national champs every year, and so yeah, just pushing to go to the World Cup team, and when Blanky left the team, there was like an opening, so got to do the full World Cup in 2010, and yeah, it was definitely an eye-opening experience. I think that season it rained at every World Cup round I was at, and I had never like ridden in the mud before, so it was a wild season, but definitely a great experience with Gwinny and Jared, and just being so young, getting thrown into the mix was good, and definitely made me a better rider for it.
It's got to be a little intimidating, eh? You're one of the top American racers, and you get thrown onto a team where Gwyn kind of came out of nowhere to what he is right now, and especially with Jared, where, and if anything that has wheels and he puts his mind to it, that guy seems to be, I would personally say he's the best mountain bike handler out there. It must have been just like a bit of a like, oh, like my dream has come true, and wow, I'm on the same team as these two. Wow, one who's a legend, another one, one of the fastest up and coming mountain bikers out there. That's so amazing.
Yeah, no, it was a great experience, and that's one of the cool things about the Yeti team, is they're always trying to bring up the next fast young up and comers, and then they mix them with their established pro riders, and that definitely helps kids come up through the ranks. Like you see it with Richie and a bunch of other riders over the years, so it's definitely a part of the program that makes it tick over well, you know.
Yeah, very much so. And then, so of course now, you know, things have changed. You finish, you graduate university, you got your degree, you go work for Yeti. And I got touched at the start. I mean, following your Instagram feed, you're pretty much the classic Colorado kid, in the sense of you're adventuring around. You're always up to some crazy thing. Just even talking to the last couple weekends, I know it's like, oh, can we do something on weekend? You're like, oh, I'm gonna go get up at 4 a.m. and go climb or go ride my bike for 6 hours to the base of this mountain, and then we're gonna go summit this mountain, and then we're gonna come down in the dark and do it all again the next day. Is that growing up in Colorado kind of what has made you such a good bike handler and just somebody who loves the adventure of the outdoors?
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, growing up, it was always like growing up in the mountains outside of Boulder. It's like either are just bored or you go do something outside. So, you know, you're always doing something outside, whether it's skiing or hiking, going for an adventure, riding your bike, building jumps, and that's just kind of how I grew up, and it's kind of, you know, made the lifestyle I live today reality. Definitely like super lucky to grow up here, and it's been awesome for sure.
Yeah, I guess I can attest to that. Growing up on the west coast of BC, growing up in Vancouver Island, and now living in Colin Whistler home the last 10 years. It's, I guess, until you travel somewhere else, you don't really realize just how fortunate you are when you have, a certain I call it my backyard, but calling what your home, you know, where you live is your backyard, where you can go hiking, you can go snowboarding, you can go skiing, you can go biking, you can go fishing, you can do whatever you want. I mean, seems like you kind of do every sport out there nowadays.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things after I stopped. I got injured in 2011 with a pretty big knee injury. I had to have surgery, so I was out most of the year that year. And the plan that year was to race mostly like national stuff and North American World Cups, but that's kind of when I took like maybe a little bit of a step back from like full-time downhill racing and decided to work at Yeti instead, just to be able to do both and kind of still make a lifestyle out of riding bikes and be a part of the bike industry. And I don't know, when I stopped like racing like full-time, I was able to kind of take a step back and do some of these like adventures all around Colorado that I never really had an opportunity to do with racing, because you're either always training or on some regimented schedule or off racing. So that the last couple of years have been pretty awesome in that sense, that I've been able to just kind of get into some of this other stuff that I never was able to do before, you know, having been racing pretty much full time every summer since I was 13.
Yeah, very, very cool. Cool to see that. Yeah, you accomplish your goals with mountain biking, and yeah, sometimes an unfortunate injury can also open up other doors. And then I guess this kind of led you into your sort of thrust into the, I would say, the spotlight in terms of the Enduro World Series is created, and there's some, you know, lots of us all ride what we ride, you know, it's what the Enduro format is kind of how you go ride your bike on weekends. You go out with your buddies, you go cruise the uphill, and then you do pin the downhill. So Winter Park round comes around, the best in the world are in Colorado, not Winter Park, not being your, you know, your backyard track or whatever. And you're battling it out in the top five with these guys. I mean, how was that? I mean, I remember watching a little video, and they're, you know, you're doing like a bike check, and you're like, oh yeah, I was gonna put on a chain guide, but I was at work, and I just kind of figured I'd just roll up with the, you know, the multi-chain ring setup and just wing it. I mean, how was Winter Park for you? Because I thought it was an amazing story to be watching unfold.
Yeah, no, it was awesome, and you know, like I said, like I had accomplished a lot of my goals in downhill, and you know, I was a little bit burnt out on downhill for sure. And then the last couple of years, I just spent like riding lots of XC, doing a few downhill races here and there, just having a good time. And then I saw this Enduro stuff, you know, kind of coming in the last season or two. And just like instantly, I was super intrigued. And I was like, that looks awesome. Like, I will race again if I go to a few of these and I like them. And just kind of showed up at a few of them at the beginning of the year, and you know, it just was a great vibe, like no pressure, just showing up, having a good time, like lots of riding throughout the weekend, and the format just fits my riding style way better. It fits like my mentality better, and I just enjoy it quite a bit more. So signed up for the Winter Park round, got in, and yeah, just was like, I know I could do like top 10 here, and if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it's all cool. And I guess I was pretty surprised when I had a crash in the first stage and was still like top 10. I was like, no way is this happening, you know? Because, you know, I guess like it's a World Cup for Enduro, and if I had ever gotten in the top 10 in the downhill World Cup, I would have been over the moon. So
yeah.
You know, I was kind of comparing it apples to apples with Downhill World Cup and Enduro World Cup. And for that to happen, I was like, wow, no shit.
Yeah, man.
And then just, I guess the momentum built throughout the whole weekend and had some good stages and had a few crashes too. And it didn't even seem to affect the overall result that much. I think I crashed 3 times that weekend in between all the stages, and still made it happen and ended up getting second in one stage behind Jared. And just to like see your name on paper above Jerome and Nico and stuff, I was like, no way, this is not happening.
Yeah, I mean, that was you know, watching it unfold you know, via Twitter and the live lap times and stuff coming in, it was like, you know, we hadn't seen that any of the Enduro World Series rounds, like the top five, maybe even the top 10 is kind of already, it's not predetermined, but they're, you know, the regular faces you're going to see in there. And I did have you picked out, like, as you know, I was like, man, like Joey, he's such a, you know, you've done a lot of other Enduros, amazing bike handler. I was like, you know, this is his backyard. It'd be interesting to see what he can do. And then, yeah, watching the stuff pop up, I'm like, he's doing it. Like, he's doing what nobody else is doing. You're beating the best guys in the world. And again, I talked to you with during Whistler's Enduro World Series. You don't ride those. That's not like you ride those tracks every day and you've been pounding out laps. You're saying that, you know, you ride there once in a blue moon kind of thing. So that was even cooler to see. I mean, it's that probably thick altitude Colorado blood you got flowing through. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not to go without saying that there wasn't some serious advantages, you know, like just being familiar with the dirt and like having like friends and family up there and being super used to the altitude with a lot of people, which a lot of people were struggling with, like all those definitely helped big into my favor. But, you know, it was definitely a shocker to me to have such a good weekend there. And yeah, it was like pretty much the best weekend of racing I've ever had. And, you know, after that, it was like, okay, it's game on. I'm still a racer. You can't get the racer out of me. I'm having so much fun, and you know, I'm gonna be racing enduro for many, many, many years. I can. That's like the first thing I thought after that weekend was like, I'm an enduro racer now.
Yeah, well, I think it's just a cool format. I mean, I can attest to you, agree with you 100%. I mean, I did the downhill thing, not to the same level as you, and I only did my first enduro last year, and I think it's just more, you do these smaller grassroots runs, even the Enduro World Series, and it's just, you're hanging out with buddies, you're going for a ride, you get to race some cool stages, and, you know, I guess, do you feel more comfortable and confident on your trail bike or your downhill bike?
Oh, absolutely on my trail bike. You know, it's the bike I ride every day, and it's way more fun for me to ride, to be honest. Like, I got a downhill bike this season, and I did one race down in Angel Fire with it, and it was fun and all, but, like, compared to the Enduros, like, that race was nowhere near as much fun, and just to ride that little bike is way more fun for me. It's just a lot more responsive and flickable, and it makes way more sense to me, and it's just, like, it's a bike that is practical, and it makes sense to ride, and you know, with downhill, it's one thing that kind of started turning me off was just how short the runs were. You know, your weekend is just blowing so quick. Whereas in the Enduros, like, yeah, I crashed a couple times at Winter Park and you make mistakes here and there, but you still can salvage a great weekend. And it's just a lot more fun. And that's what I'm all about, is just having fun.
Yeah. And you get to these rounds, and we did some of our earlier shows with, you know, Tracy Mosley and Jerome and all these guys, and they're coming here and they're like, I think the biggest thing is we're getting to experience so many different trails. And I think that's the one thing I love about it is you go to a new race and you don't just go practice one track, race one track, and that's your entire weekend wrapped up. You're like, there could be amazing riding elsewhere, but with downhill, you're there to do one trail.
Yeah, you go to these absolutely. I remember people saying, you went to Chambéry, oh, you went to Italy, like, how are all the trails around there? Can you recommend trails to ride? And it's like, oh, I don't really know. We only rode one trail there, and that's it. Like, we just rode the racetrack and nothing else. Whereas in Enduro, like, you're going to these places, you're sampling all the trails, and you're riding all weekend. You're not just, like, hanging out in the pits waiting for your race run all weekend. Like, you're riding all weekend.
Yeah.
And that's what's awesome, like, mountain bike racing is about riding bikes, not just sitting around hanging out for just that one quick run. At least to me, at least that's how I see it.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you came up to Whistler here and you pulled out a 33rd, and obviously never riding this stuff here. I think it's an impressive result considering the terrain that's in the backyard. Are we going to see it more, these Enduro World Series, in the future? Like, have you kind of caught the bug where you're like, you know, hey, Jared's doing them for the Yeti team. Like, are we going to maybe see you at a couple more rounds next year, especially with the schedule just being announced, new venues and everything like that? Are we going to see it more, or is it kind of you still got to make sure you're going to work and maybe the odd race here and there?
No, I'll definitely try to make it to a few more of them. I don't really see doing like the full series next season, but I guess we'll just kind of take a look at which tracks make the most sense to go to, like which events I could probably do the best at, and just kind of pick and choose from that. And then, we'll make a few rounds happen for sure. Hopefully at least three or four.
Oh, right on.
And, that's the plan. And, you know, Yeti's been awesome about supporting me with racing this season while still being a full-time employee. So, that's definitely one really, really cool thing about working here. And, you know, they just get it. And if you're doing good, they're going to send you a race. And that's just amazing, you know. And there's not many jobs out there that support racing and keeping you on as a full-time employee. So it's pretty much the dream job. And it takes a lot of the pressure off the racing to have a full-time job and not just rely on your race results to kind of validate yourself, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You're not, it's not the, you know, age old saying you're only as good as your last race. You know, you're still going back to employment on Monday there. And you know, they take care of you from top to bottom. So, you know, it'll be exciting to see it some more rounds next year and everything. So, I guess one question is, what was your take on the Enduro World Series? Like, you know, I think everybody was just so blown away by its level of organization and everything. Is there anything that really stood out to you as just being like, wow, this is going to last a long time?
Oh yeah. I don't see it as just like some people have been like, some people that don't like Enduro maybe have said, oh, it's just a trend and Enduro is stupid, but I think it's pretty well here to stay. And, you know, you can tell like just by how much fun the riders are having, how many people are transferring to just racing Enduro. And from an industry standpoint, it makes sense because, you know, trail bikes are the bikes that people want to buy and the bikes people want to ride. And, you know, Chris Ball's done an amazing job organizing it and making sure all these events go down, you know, pretty much perfectly. So, I mean, for the inaugural season, I think it couldn't have gone any better. And I really only see it getting bigger from here. So, I mean, I'm just bummed that, you know, they didn't have all this enduro racing going on when I was younger because, you know, if I was 15, that's like what I would have done. I would have been an enduro racer, not a downhill racer.
Yeah, well, it's not like you're that old yet there. Remember, you're still a young kid, Joey.
I know. I was saying that exact same thing to Jared. He's like, are you kidding me? You're telling me?
Yeah.
He's like, I'm way older than you, and I just got into it, and, you know, this is what I would have raced all the years, so.
Yeah, well, no, I guess the format kind of almost caters to, like, you know, as much as you wish that you were younger, like, I think it's something you can still, you know, you can still do regardless of your age. You know, you could still compete competitively into your early 30s. I don't see, you know, as long as you're in shape, I almost see you getting better each year, like, riders getting better each year just with their racecraft and just conditioning on a regular basis. And it's
that's one of the things that's cool about it. You know, downhill, like, you're always slamming your body into the ground, like, you're taking big risks, and you could definitely mess yourself up in enduro, but it's just, you don't really feel like you have to, like, put your life on the line to win a race. And I think that is appealing to a lot of people. And, you know, you see a lot of the guys in their 30s doing really good. So to be 23 and see, you know, all the 30 plus guys crushing it is definitely inspiring. And, you know, down in Durango last weekend for the Big Mountain Enduro race, I think the top three dudes were like 39, 37, and 35. And then I was in fourth there. So I was like, oh man, I got plenty of time to get up to these guys.
You got many, many years to come before you, you can think of even pulling the pin. And for sure. You know,
but that's one thing.
Go ahead.
I was talking with Jared Graves, and we're kind of saying how with enduro now, we're going to start seeing riders come up that are just enduro racers that were never XC or downhill. And, you know, that's going to be cool to watch that develop as guys come into the sport just as enduro racers to start with.
Yeah, yeah, but not being kind breed of downhillers or anything else. Very, very specific riding, but, you know, I think at the end of the day, like, I ride my bike the exact same way, regardless if it's kind of a race or not. my trail bike. And it's funny, I got on my downhill bike yesterday to go do some photo stuff, and I was like, well, this feels really, really weird to be on this bike again. Like, I can't just flick it around and pick it up and downhill bikes, I think, are super fun, but there's just something about going for a trail ride that's just, I'm going adventuring this weekend, and I can't wait for the weekend already. I'm like, yeah, trail bikes, let's go ride some new trails.
Yeah, for sure. Like with the downhill bikes, you're always like, okay, I have to load up, I have to go to a resort, I have to could buy a ticket, do runs, or have to, get a group of buddies together to go shuttling. But with the trail bike, like, okay, I'm going to go ride this right now straight from my house, and you can just make it happen that easy. So I find myself riding quite a bit more now than I ever did when I was just riding downhill bikes most of the time.
Yeah, I just exactly the same. I'll get home, and it's unfortunately that time of year where light is getting more and more limited. If I get stuck at work late, I'm like, I got 40 minutes, and the kind of ride that I can still crank out in 40 minutes. I mean, I think that's just amazing. Just the bike technology that's out there and what's being created bike wise. You can ride everything. You can ride the gnarliest trails out there on these fully capable trail bikes.
Yeah, for sure. And Jared's result at Worlds on the SD66 is just, another testament of that.
Yeah, exactly. So, but, we put out, of course, like I said, at the start of the show, we put out tweets and, of who our guests are going to be. And we probably had the most feedback from anybody here as you as a guest. So we've got a few questions for you actually for some of your fans. First question being, what is your best adventure yet? This is coming from Two Flat.
Huh. Best adventure yet? I don't know. I think that's something that I've been trying to top every weekend. But man, I don't know if you saw the bus video I just put out, but me and my buddy, he got a bus off Craigslist, full-size school bus, converted it to run out of veg oil, and we just kind of one day, what do you think about taking the bus up to Canada next week? And just kind of it all came together, and before we knew it, we're on the trip of a lifetime, just, cruising through the U.S. up to Canada in a school bus. It was pretty much the ultimate adventure.
Yeah, no, that video was awesome. I caught that when it first came out there, and for anybody listening, definitely check it out. It's I never did the university thing, but watching that, I was like, this is so cool. You guys graduate and you're like, let's go on an adventure. Let's load up a mobile command unit that just burns waste oil, and you guys kind of went all over the place, which was so cool. And you guys even had a hot tub. Mind blowing.
Oh yeah. That's the good thing about the bus. You can fit all the toys in there and load up the kayaks, load up the skis, load up the bikes, and just go make everything happen. And I guess when you're on a bus trip, you just have a different mentality about pretty much everything. So it's just great. You wake up every day and you're just like, what can we do today that is awesome? And that's why that trip was so awesome. It's like, that is like our only worries for 2 weeks. And I think we'll have to do another bus trip here in the next couple of years and try to outdo ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like if we ask you that exact same question in a year's time, you'll have another answer, or you'll have some other crazy adventure or hike or anything that you've been on. I mean, super active guy out there, so.
For sure. No, I mean, lately it's just been just pretty busy summer, so it's just little weekend adventures on the mountain bike or whatever, but hopefully get some more big ones going soon.
Yeah, definitely. And then another question we have here from Paul Withers. He's asking, do you have to wait for spare parts, I guess, is what he's asking, like us mere mortals? Or do you just go down to the candy store in the rest of the warehouse and just pick out whatever you need if you need a fresh part on the bike?
Well, I don't know if it's that easy, but no, I know all the right people to talk to. They're not too far away, just down the hall here at Yeti, so usually I can make something happen. But definitely lucky to have this crew here at Yeti. definitely lucky there.
Yeah, wicked, wicked. And then another question. You kind of touched on it earlier, but Richard Hyder, was wondering, how do you fill your time between racing and fulfilling your marketing role at Yeti? And then he says, whatever the answer, I'm jealous. So
yeah. No, it's pretty hard for sure to pull off the full-time marketing job and do all these adventures and race. So, I mean, coming into the job, it was, you know, all these things that I wanted to do, and I just had to make a decision, and that's just kind of like, you know, a lifestyle choice. You know, I'm either doing one of those three things, you know, either on adventure or racing or working here. So there's really not much time for anything else, but I wouldn't want it any other way right now, I guess.
Yeah, from the outside looking in and just chatting to you, I think you have your head on straight. You have a pretty good lifestyle there. I mean, like another couple months of mountain bike adventures, and all of a sudden the white stuff will be on the ground, and time to put away the bikes for a bit and get out on the skis for some touring, I guess. So it's a nonstop adventure.
Oh yeah, never a dull moment. You always got to be doing something. There's never a weekend where I'm just like, I think I'll sit at home this weekend and do nothing. It's always, what can we do this weekend that was crazier than last weekend? So definitely, once the snow starts flying here, we'll be doing some good ski adventures all around the state here. And yeah, looking forward to a little bit of a change of pace there, but it'll be good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think what we'll do is we'll start wrapping things up here. I know for me, my lunch break is nearing an end, and I need to go back to doing what I do at the office and let you get back to it there too. But obviously, we've only got one more Enduro World Series round this year. We've got two more World Cups, next one being at Norway coming up soon there. Steve Smith winning it last year. I'm sure he'll want redemption after his world's little mistake there in the first corner. So still some exciting racing to come. Hard to believe there's only three more races really this season for us here at Off Track to cover. And just, I guess it just kind of shows we're winding down. It's that time of year. So yeah, hopefully everybody, all of our listeners, are making the most of what's left of summer. And if you're on the other side of the world and you're dealing with winter, well, summer's coming for you. But, yeah, of course, everybody stay up to date, Twitter, Instagram, emails if you have any questions. And, Joey, I just want to say thanks very much for taking the time to join us here on the Off-Track Show presented by BikeMag.com. Appreciate you taking the time on your lunch break and sharing just some of these stories and kind of your, you know, rise to amazing success this year with the Enduro World Series. And we look forward to, watching in many years to come and racing some more races there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show, and yeah, have a good one.
Yeah, definitely, man. Well, all the best down in the next little bit. I look forward to keeping up with your adventures and catching up with you outside of the Off-Track Show. But we'll let you go and enjoy the rest of your afternoon. And for everybody at home, thanks for taking the time to listen, and we'll catch you guys right after Norway.